And gentlemen, could you take your seats, please? We're very privileged this evening to have Amira Huck speak to us on the topic of challenges and opportunities in peacekeeping and peacebuilding. She'll be talking from her own experience, which is wide. She's currently the Special Representative of the Secretary-General in East Timor, Timor-Leste. Before that, she's been Deputy SRSG in both Afghanistan and Sudan, and also Resident Coordinator, Humanitarian Coordinator. She's spent 30-plus years in the United Nations system, is widely, hugely experienced, and I think of perhaps most interest to a number in this audience, she spent some years in Malaysia in the 1990s. Overall, I think the experience that Amira Huck can draw upon is such that few of us would be able to match. That's probably enough for me, because I certainly don't have the experience to talk about the issues. Amira.
Good evening, and assalamu alaikum. Distinguished representatives of the Pearson Peacekeeping Center, the Asia Pacific Civil Military Center of Excellence, the International Peace Institute, and the Institute of Strategic and International Studies here in Malaysia. Ladies and gentlemen, it is just wonderful to be back in KL. So thank you for giving me this privilege of addressing you today. As the Special Representative of the Secretary General and head of the United Nations mission and it's an integrated mission in Timor-Leste, I'm really delighted to be with you here this evening to share my perspectives on peacekeeping and peace building. And I will draw particularly on my experiences from Timor-Leste. But as Jim just said, I will also make some observations having been in two other peacekeeping missions, namely in Sudan and Afghanistan. So before going into some of the challenges of the complex areas of peace building and peacekeeping, let me just say a few words about Southeast Asia's generous contribution to UN peacekeeping and about some of the recent developments in Timor-Leste. Many countries in the Southeast Asia region have proven to be key partners in peacekeeping, as we saw today, in Timor-Leste and around the world. Unfortunately, demand for peacekeeping has increased in recent years. But in step with that, we have seen new momentum in this region's involvement in all aspects of UN peacekeeping, from military to policing to civilian roles. Furthermore, Southeast Asia now hosts a number of quality training centers to continue developing these capabilities. This morning, we heard about the dialogue between the United Nations and ASEAN on increasing this role. The number of training centers and this momentum that you have started is really all very welcome developments for the United Nations as we continue our role in this important area. Let me tell you that I have seen many of your troops. Many of you have sent troops, military, police, and civilians. And I have seen many of those, your military contingents, your police contingents, and your civilians who are working in the remotest regions of Afghanistan, Darfur, South Sudan, and in Timor-Leste. And today, since so many of you are representatives here of those countries who are sending those troops, let me tell you that you should be absolutely so proud of the tremendous contribution that your brave men and women are making to world peace. You know, very often we have the medal ceremonies that we give to them in recognition of their service. And very often my staff will tell me, because I make it a point when I am there, to go to every single medal ceremony. And very often my staff will ask me, do you really want to go? You know, you've been to the Malaysian medal ceremony once, do you really want to go? And I always make it a point, if I am in Timor-Leste, to attend every single medal ceremony, because it is a very touching moment for me to pin the United Nations medals on to those who that you have sent, who are making tremendous sacrifices, being away from their family, all in the efforts for world peace. Southeast Asia can also draw on its own experience of peacekeeping within the region. And let me just give an example of the UN mission to Cambodia, as I mentioned yesterday, in Antak in the early 1990s. Since then, Cambodia has made the transition from being a recipient of peacekeeping support to contributing troops to peacekeeping missions abroad. And I'm pleased to say that Timor-Leste is already on that same path to becoming a peacekeeping contributor. On the 12th of April this year, two officers of the Policía Nacional de Timor-Leste, PNTL for short, were deployed to the UN Integrated Peacebuilding Office in Guinea-Bissau. I myself saw these two police officers off, and I can tell you it was a proud moment for Timor-Leste. And on the 15th of July, 12 army engineers from the Timorese Defense Forces, the FFDTL, began a six-month joint training to prepare for integration into a Portuguese contingent to serve with the UN Interim Force in Lebanon, UNIFIL, marking Timor-Leste's first military contribution to a UN peacekeeping mission. And this afternoon, I think some of you were talking about these joint missions joint deployments that can take place. And here is an example of Timor-Leste joining up with the Portuguese contingent. And once again, I was at the ceremony when these 12 FFDTL members were seen off by their president and the prime minister. And I can tell you it was a very touching moment when Ramos Horta kissed the flag of Timor-Leste and handed it to the 12 soldiers who will be going to UNIFIL. So again, a very, very proud moment in the history and annals of peacekeeping. As one of the youngest countries in the world, and Asia's youngest certainly, Timor-Leste is in many ways fortunate to be part of Southeast Asia. The commitment of partners in the region has been central to the work of the UN peacekeeping missions to restore stability and build the foundations for lasting peace in the country. We have greatly appreciated the generous support of Australia, China, Indonesia, Japan, Malaysia, New Zealand, Philippines, Singapore, and Thailand. And let me tell you, with respect to Malaysia, Philippines, Singapore, and Thailand, you have provided highly capable force commanders, military contingents, formed police units, and police personnel to successive UN missions in Timor-Leste. Malaysia, for example, has maintained a sizable peacekeeping presence in Timor-Leste over the years. They continue to be one of the biggest contributors to the United Nations police contingent, with 215 police personnel. This follows earlier policing contingents to the UN mission of support in East Timor, UNMISSET, in 2003. And let me tell you again that you must be very proud of the work that they are doing. The Malaysian contingent, formed police unit, are one of two formed police units that are in Dili, in the capital, but the Malaysian contingent resides right in the area that we consider one of the hotspot areas. And your brave police men and women go on foot patrols. Recently, we had a fight outbreak of violence between youth gangs, and your police were there trying to bring reconciliation and working with the communities to bring about a peace and understanding. So they are doing tremendous work. On a personal basis, let me tell you that I never fail to refuse an invitation to go to the Malaysian contingent, and I'll tell you a secret why. They have wonderful Malaysian food. So keep them coming. Southeast Asia's support to UN missions in Timor-Leste has also extended to high-level leadership roles. Again, this afternoon, our colleague from Japan asked that specific question. Some of you may recall Mr. Eric Tan Hak Gwim of Singapore, who served in Timor-Leste twice, first as the force commander of UNMISSET in 2002 and 2003, and he later returned in 2006 as the deputy SRSG for security support and rule of law for the UN mission here. These contributions of such well-regarded and capable military, police, and civilian personnel contribute much to the work of the UN in Timor-Leste. But beyond this support, there are several other reasons why Southeast Asia makes for excellent company for this young country, Timor-Leste. The region has demonstrated a range of impressive achievements. There is a commitment to multilateralism, with ASEAN leading the way. There is a well-developed regional security dialogue and architecture. For example, the ASEAN Regional Forum, the Shangri-La Dialogue, and ISIS's own Asia-Pacific Roundtable. There is a vibrant regional marketplace that continues to develop at impressive rates. In due course, opportunities for further economic, social, and cultural exchanges and cooperation will arise. Timor-Leste's own unique experiences and perspectives make it a valuable partner in all these fora. And as you are all well aware, Indonesia has been a very strong proponent of Timor-Leste's entry into ASEAN. In the 10 years since achieving independence, Timor-Leste has made remarkable progress. Conflict and strife have been replaced by peace and economic growth. This is made clear by the number of Timorese that I see every day, building new homes, running small businesses, all in a safe and secure environment. There are many who recall Timor-Leste in 2006, and I can't tell you how many times I have had people return to Timor-Leste who saw what it was like in 2006 and who remark at how much progress has been made in terms of what they see, people going about safely in the beaches, going up to the mountains for picnics. Timor-Leste is enjoying strong economic growth with notable steps forward in socioeconomic development. These include reductions in the percentage of the population living in poverty and improvement in human development indicators. I have been particularly pleased to see the government's renewed commitment to the Millennium Development Goals, to coherent, transparent, well-coordinated, and genuinely Timorese-owned planning processes. This commitment has been accompanied by a steady increase in the capacity of Timorese institutions in the governance, justice, and security sectors to serve Timorese people in an effective and accountable manner. Finally, there have been also significant advances made in the political sphere. Political differences in Timor-Leste today are played out in democratic fora, they are not played out in the streets. The signs of Timorese leaders' commitment to political stability and constructive dialogue on national development priorities are clear and manifold. I am heartened by the strong commitment of all parties to the democratic process and to ensuring peace and stability. Timor-Leste is entering an important period with presidential and parliamentary elections coming up next year in 2012. As requested by the government, the United Nations mission in Timor-Leste will provide technical, logistical, and security, primarily through police, support for the elections. In the lead up to this milestone, we were very encouraged by the strong commitment of leaders across the political spectrum to free, fair, and violence-free elections. And may I also take this opportunity to tell you that the government of Timor-Leste has requested international observers for the upcoming election. Let me use this occasion to pass on that request to you so that you may respond either on a bilateral basis or through regional organizations. Given the improvements in the overall situation in Timor-Leste, the United Nations mission is expected to withdraw by December 2012. To ensure a smooth transition, we are working closely with Timorese authorities to ensure that the activities currently carried out by the mission, which will need to be continued after 2012, are effectively transferred to other institutions. To this end, we have established a jointly owned transition planning and implementation mechanism, working under the guidance of the President, the Prime Minister, and myself. We are also keeping our international partners fully engaged throughout the process to make sure that we all move forward together. As the head of the United Nations mission, making sure that the mission concludes its mandate in Timor-Leste in a way which creates the best possible conditions for continued peace and stability is my top priority. With these experiences from Timor-Leste in mind, I would now like to turn to some of the broader challenges of implementing peacekeeping and peace-building agendas. The first challenge is doing both peacekeeping and peace-building at the same time. Peacekeeping and peace-building are not alternatives to each other, nor are they sequential phases of activity. Peace building does not begin when peacekeepers leave or when we deploy a peace building office. Peace building is a process whereby a country emerging from conflict builds long-term stability and restores the social contract between the state and its people. It is a national challenge and fundamentally a political process. It entails a range of activities aimed at making peace self-sustaining and reducing the risk of relapse into conflict. Peacekeeping, on the other hand, is one of several policy instruments that may support peace building. It brings a certain set of international capacities to support peace building in the critical early stages when risks are at the highest. That includes facilitating political processes, providing a security umbrella, and enabling other partners to channel support where it is needed. Let me tell you about an experience in Afghanistan. I served in Afghanistan from 1978 to 1980. I was there when the Russians came in. And I went back to Afghanistan in January of 2002. And when I went back in January 2002, I saw a country that was completely decimated, no capacity, a city, Kabul, that was in ruins. And I went around trying to see if I could find anyone whom I knew from my years in 1978 to 1980. And in the end, I was able to gather together a few of the guards at the UNDP offices, at the guest house, and there were about, I think, five or six people who I remembered from that time. And I remember sitting with them and having a cup of tea. And I asked them, I said, if I were able to grant you a wish, what is it that you would want? And let me tell you, without batting an eyelid, and as quickly as they could respond, they all said, we want to feel safe. And that was something that I pointed out this morning, that the need for this human security to feel safe is what that first element of peacekeeping is about. And it is providing that security umbrella. But, you know, when I probed them and I said, you want to feel safe for what? And they said, we want to feel safe when our children walk out of the house to go to school, and we want our children to go to school. So again, you can see just in this response from ordinary people who had suffered from years of conflict, the need for both, you know, the articulation was both for peacekeeping and peace building. And I think that is what the cry that we respond to. International peacekeeping must always be accompanied by a solid strategy for building a lasting peace. In Timor-Leste, this has meant devoting significant resources to supporting institution building, especially in justice, governance, and security sectors. For example, while UNMIT initially had an executive policing mandate, our eyes were always on the goal of building the capacity of the National Police of Timor-Leste. Now that we have handed over the primary policing responsibility, transferring knowledge and skills to our Timorese counterparts is our main role. And therefore, I think the tension that we always have in peacekeeping and peace building is the tension between doing something immediately to reduce the stresses that people have felt during the conflict, and at the same time, balancing it with the need to build the lasting institutions and capacity building. And somehow we've got to find that balance, that right balance. The second challenge is getting the goals of peace building right. The key for sustainable peace is not only to remove conflict, but to help develop strong institutions which are able to manage and cope with political disagreement. Needless to say, conflict is a natural part of a democratic society, which needs to be factored into the design of systems and processes which ensure constructive and participatory outcomes. In Timor-Leste, we have seen political institutions mature since the crisis of 2006. Furthermore, bodies and institutions to deal with important issues like corruption and civilian oversight of security institutions have been added or significantly strengthened. In this area, the United Nations and regional and bilateral partners can play an important role, providing technical expertise and advocacy for a strong, transparent, and effective institutional framework able to prevent political disagreement from spiraling into violent conflict. The third challenge, and let me say, the fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh challenge is staying the course. Staying the course. Peacekeeping is, by nature, a limited endeavor. However, the institutional approach required for successful peace building requires long-term commitment. As I mentioned earlier, this is exactly why our transition planning aims to identify partners who can carry on the long-term work begun by successive peacekeeping missions in Timor-Leste. In this regard, the role of regional powers is vital. as sources of technical assistance, economic cooperation, and if needed, conflict resolution. Indeed, interlinked regional interests in shared stability and prosperity make regional partners uniquely placed to provide this kind of long-term support. A sound division of labor and responsibilities between international, regional, and bilateral partners will help us make sure that we do not reduce our peace-building support to countries emerging from conflict too quickly or abruptly. In the case of Timor-Leste, it will certainly need the engagement of its Southeast Asian partners for a long time to come to consolidate progress made to date. Ladies and gentlemen, to conclude, I would like to emphasize that while transitioning out of conflict and building sustainable peace are ultimately processes that must be led by the people and the leaders of a given country, the engagement of the United Nations, member states, regional and international stakeholders is absolutely essential in ensuring their success. As for Timor-Leste, I am looking forward to the elections next year and am confident that we will be able to bring peacekeeping to a close as planned at the end of 2012, allowing the Timorese authorities and their partners to focus on sustaining stability and building better lives for the Timorese people. As indispensable partners to Timor-Leste's road to peace to date, I hope that Southeast Asia's support to the Timorese in this process will continue long into the future. Thank you so much.
Big test, does the mobile microphone work? Yes, it does. For those of you who would like to consider some of the many themes addressed by Amira, this speech will be available as a podcast on the ISIS Malaysia website soon, I understand. We do have time, however, to address any of the themes in more detail through question and answer for those who would like to ask Amira to go into more depth into some of the areas she touched on. We have a microphone in the center. If you could come forward, give your name, and ask the question. Or alternatively, we go straight to eating. The question is, can we stay silent long enough to embarrass anyone to come and stand? Yes.
I'll ask a question. Given that Martin Fisher from the Pearson Peacekeeping Center, given that there are several other missions where the host government has indicated that they wish to see either the peacekeeping mission transition into a different form, where we saw that request being fulfilled from Monuc into MONUSCO, and apparently if the election in the DRC goes as planned, there's likely to be a request for another transition or an exit. So I'm wondering if you could comment a little bit more in detail on the transition mechanism, on the joint transition mechanism that you mentioned, and maybe, if possible, sort of pull out some of the successes and maybe also some of the difficulties that mechanism has had and where those lessons may apply to other missions. Thank you.
Good. thank you. The transition plan, I will also send a website where you can actually look at the transition plan, is a joint transition plan, and let me underline the joint, because the joint is between the government and ourselves, and I think that is a very important element to stress. So as I mentioned, the Joint Transition Plan is chaired. We have a mechanism which is called a High-Level Committee on Transition. It is chaired by the president, and the co-chairs are the prime minister and myself. And there are cabinet members on the government of Timor-Leste side and some of my senior staff. We have been working, and we work together with the government in setting up seven different groups related to security, to justice, human rights, to the economic impact of our withdrawal, to the training of our national staff who will be left behind. We have 1,000 national staff. When the mission closes, we wanted to make sure that they are well equipped to either get other jobs or to start their own businesses. So we have embarked on a very robust training for them. So there are seven areas of the transition where we have technical working groups. And each one of these working groups have looked at the mandate of UNMIT, and we have highlighted 143 activities that UNMIT does either on a daily or a weekly or a monthly basis. And each one of these groups have looked at what activities will be completed by the time we leave in 2012, what activities will not be completed, and whether it is important for those activities to continue, and then who we think is best placed to continue that. In some instances, some of these activities should be taken over by the national authorities. In other instances, it'll be taken over, hopefully, by bilateral or multilateral or other institutions. And let me give you a couple of examples of what I'm talking about in this transition. One is on the area that we call democratic governance. For example, the mission produces a monthly record of all major decisions and meetings that were held by the government. So, it is whatever laws were passed in parliament, whatever policies were passed or decrees were passed by the president or the council of ministers, but all important activities are recorded monthly. You know, we do this, we've often wondered whether, is this something useful? And in the transition meeting that we have, in the high-level transition meeting that we had, we mentioned that this is one of the things that we do. Is this useful to you? Is this something that you would like to see continue? And at that point, the president said, it is one of the most useful documents that I receive. Someone must take this on. So now they will, in their Council of Ministers, will determine who in the government or outside of the government is best placed to take on this activity, and we will then train that entity for a year. Another very concrete and pragmatic example is that between the UN's air assets and that provided by the International Stabilization Forces which include Australia and New Zealand, that is all the air capacity that is available for internal movement within Timor-Leste. So between our helicopters and our fixed-wing assets of the ISF and ourselves, that is all the air capacity there is in Timor-Leste within. So very often, our helicopters are the ones when they're, in the island of Atauro, if there is any medical evacuation that is required, it is our helicopters that go out and bring the people in. So again, we've told the government we are leaving now it's almost a year. You need to make some arrangements of how you will provide this helicopter capacity. And we have offered technical assistance through our civil air aviation support services to help the government to look at bids that are coming in for interest from outside companies to do this and to provide that technical assistance. So I just give these as two examples of two areas of transition issues that need to be addressed, because the UN is providing this service and the government needs to take it on. With respect to policing, of course, we are concentrating fully on building up the capacity. So these are, I don't know if that answers some of your questions with respect to transition. Yeah. Yes.
Vice Admiral Kamaruzaman, Joint Force Commander of the Malaysian Armed Forces. Thank you very much, Mrs. Haq, for sharing with us the some of your perspective and with respect to the peacekeeping and the peace-building challenges in East Timor. Obviously, it covers a lot of wide-ranging issues there. But you have also mentioned just now, you're talking about addressing the regional stakeholders as well as the global stakeholders. What I'd like to share is because I just came back from sending off our team, about 540 of those, replacing the group that we have got in Malaysian contingent in Lebanon this morning, or as I would have joined the session today. And tomorrow I'll be receiving a group coming back from Beirut. Now, what we also has looked at is that from the perspective of the internal stakeholders, internal stakeholders here, what I mean is basically the domestic thing. Just like to share with all of us here. There were about 1,000 families just now sending them off. And some of the things that we, in the military, we are so used and we are so good at getting things done, you know, doing things. But I think we are still not so good is actually because it's not just important of doing things, it's also very important of being seen as doing things, managing perception in this particular case. And the benefit of actually these people, every time they spend about 9 months, and this year onwards will be spending about 12 months whenever they are abroad, coming back from the mission. You imagine them, you know, about 1,000 of them, because they're talking about more than battalion strength, is about over 100 people. From all walks of life, all parts of the region in Malaysia, and the same in any other countries, when they start to see what they see in these, you know, places, the hardship, and to see some of those things, the challenges that are being faced, and when they start to come back and share this experience with the families, with the relatives, people within their province, and how they will appreciate peace more. And I think this is something that is very strong, very powerful, that we, I think, should be actually propagate this to the internal stakeholders. And I just want to invite some comments from you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for making that point. And let me just tell you that I think, you know, each and every single one of the, you know, whether it's military, the armed forces, or whether it's the police, each and every one of them and their contributions is a unique story. And I don't know whether they are really that well appreciated or recognized when they come back home. Let me, you know, as I said, I have seen them in far-flung regions. And since I'm in Malaysia, let me tell you about two of your police officers that I saw in an area in Timor-Leste, which is called Lac Lubar. It is very difficult to get to Lac Lubar. I went by car, and I can tell you that it was one of the scariest experiences because it was raining. And the car actually started sliding back on the, you know, in the hill as we were trying to go up. But nevertheless, we made it up there, and the Prime Minister and everyone was there. And there I saw two Malaysian police officers who lived there. Because the weather was so bad, you know, we couldn't drive back that night, and so I enjoyed the you know, evening, and we sat up late. And I was asking them about their, you know, the conditions under which they work. In order, and as I told you how bad the roads were and how slippery they were, they had no cell phone connection where they were. Because of the mountains, they could not get the signal. So in order to talk to their families, they had to either drive or go for 2 hours before they could get a signal. You know, they had the radio contact with us, and in case of an emergency, of course, you know, there would always be contact with them. But, you know, if you look at that kind of sacrifice that these two young, you know, family men, police officers were making, and then I told them, I said, you know, how long have you been here? They said, for 6 months. And I said, you know, you should be rotated so that they can come back to the capital because they're living in that isolated region. And out of curiosity, I asked the police commissioner a couple of, you know, months back when I came back, and I said, did Azman and the other guy who were in Lakhlubar, have you transferred them? He said, I wanted to, but they want to remain there. You know, they like what they're doing. They feel that they're making progress in working with their counterparts. I mean, you know, these are all tremendous stories. And I think, you know, each and every one, and I mentioned this example, but, you know, it is all of you who are making these contributions that I think the recognition and you know, receiving them back after they come from these missions is really something that that must be celebrated in your countries. Waiting for dinner.
I think that's it.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like you to join me in thanking Amira for the valuable and interesting, very interesting insights she's given into peacekeeping and peace building, especially in Timor-Leste. Thank you very much.